It's time for the Easy Organic Gardener. This is your host, Sherry Herrera de Fry, bomb composter, biocontrol specialist, horticulturalist, worm farmer, entrepreneur, and Dr. Bug Lady. It's a pleasure to be with you again. My guest this hour is the impressive Robert Engelman, population expert, author, and president of the World Watch Institute. If you would like to ask a question during this live broadcast of the Easy Organic Gardener, you can do so by calling 877-300-7645. 877-300-7645. When you call during this hour, you will receive a free $25 Arbico Organics gift certificate that you can use to purchase any of Arbico Organics' natural products for your organic home, garden, farm, and pet. If you are listening to a rebroadcast and have a question you would like to have answered, you can always send me an email at drbuglady@arbico.com. drbuglady@arbico.com. You're always welcome to call Arbico Organics during our business hours, and one of our specialists will be glad to help you out. The phone number is 800-SOS-BUGS, 800-SOS-BUGS. Be sure to go online to order your free Arbico Organics catalog. When you get a catalog, you're also going to receive a $10 off coupon that you can use toward your next purchase. Check out the Arbico Organics Facebook page. And I love it when you like us. And you can always follow me at Dr. Bug Lady on Twitter. Now I'm going to tell you about my guest. Robert Engelman is president of the World Watch Institute, a globally focused environmental research organization based in Washington, D.C. Robert originally joined World Watch as vice president for programs and was named president in 2011. Prior to joining World Watch, he was vice president for research at Population Action International, a policy research and advocacy group in Washington, and directed its program on population and the environment. He has written extensively on population's connections to environmental change, economic growth, and civil conflict. A former newspaper reporter specializing in science and the environment, Robert has served on the faculty of Yale University as a visiting lecturer and was founding secretary of the Society of Environmental Journals. Journalists. He is author of the 2008 book, More Population, Nature, and What Women Want, and his writing has appeared in scholarly and news media, including Nature, The Washington Post, and The Wall Street Journal. He also serves on the boards of the Population Resource Center and the NOVA Institute. He holds a Master's of Science degree from Columbia University's Graduate School of Journalism and a Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Chicago. He also enjoys playing his musical instruments and singing. He loves to travel, and he also works in the yard, and he's an avid composter. Yay! And now I would like to have Robert Engelman join me on the Easy Organic Gardener. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me.
My goodness gracious. When I got to the part about playing music, fiddle, guitar, piano, I thought, well, let's just can the whole show. Let's just sing.
You name a song, I'll do my best. But there are probably some other things we could do that you enjoy, that your listeners would enjoy more. But I'm open whenever you want to.
Well, we just may have to, we may cut into something, you know, you just never know on the spur of the moment.
It'd be a great theme to think about organic gardening and what are the songs that most support and go along with organic gardening. I'll have to give that some thought.
We love organic gardening. Oh, yes, we do. So there I go. Anyway, golly, it's wonderful having you on the show. The World Watch Institute is amazing, an amazing organization. The things that you have been doing, the whole legacy of, the history and whatnot. So I thought before we get into any of our other questions, I just would like you to tell us exactly what the World Watch Institute is all about, you know, how it got started. And because I know people hear about it, but I'm not sure that they really know what you're up to.
Sure. Yeah, we've been around for quite a while. And that's one reason people often do know something about us. We've been publishing books and reports about just about every aspect of the environment and nature since we were founded in 1974 by a farmer, Lester Brown, who probably is the most famous World Watcher running. He's about to turn 80. He's no longer actually with the World Watch Institute. But he had been working for the Department of Agriculture. He was an expert on the global food situation in the late 60s and early 70s, and decided that there needed to be a think tank Now I guess we call us a green think tank or an environmental think tank. Those terms weren't quite as common in the mid-70s. But you know, the mid-70s were a time when there was increasing kind of scientific attention to what was happening in the environment, even some diplomatic attention. There was a UN conference on the environment in Stockholm in 1972, and there were books coming out like The Population Bomb and The Limits to Growth. But it wasn't really reaching the mainstream media. It wasn't really reaching policymakers in any major way. And Lester had the idea, and it was a good one, that what was needed was a small, sort of edgy, scrappy think tank with a group of researchers who would try to make the story of what was happening to the planet as accessible as possible to as many readers as possible, and particularly to the news media and journalists and to policymakers, as well as university students and people like that. So he started small, and first the Institute was putting out occasional research papers, kind of little brown booklets that a lot of journalists, I recall, when I was a journalist, had kept on their desk and on certain specific problems, like maybe burning wood for fuel, you know, sort of a new energy crisis. I remember we were the first to bring attention to that, and a lot on food. Basically, in the 70s and early 80s, Lester was one of the very few people who were talking about sustainability as a concept and food sustainability, sustainable agriculture, as well as renewable energy. Even then, before people were really focusing on climate change, there was an awareness that there wasn't unlimited supplies of coal and oil and gas, and that we needed to be thinking about wind and solar energy. So we've been basically pursuing this for this basic tack for a while. 10 years after the Institute was founded, Lester started a book series called The State of the World. And that's probably our most famous product and what we're best known for, because all kinds of people have that on their bookshelves. It's been used in universities around the world. It's translated, has been translated into dozens of languages. And, you know, every year we put out this book since 1984. Our last was our 30th edition, in which we're basically, the last few years, we've taken on a particular theme and really examined it closely. And these publications get us a fair amount of, you know, media attention, opportunities like I'm having right now to speak on the radio with interesting people and interesting listenerships about these issues. And that's basically what we do. We're not really hand wavers or placard carriers. We try to tell the story and do a good analysis and of the situation. We try to be positive and suggest that there are many ways we can approach the environmental problems the world has so that we will have a sustainable society that meets human needs. And Lester's been away from the organization now for a few years, but I've been president since 2011, and we're still kind of continuing the same thing. There's a lot more competition, I might add, now. We were way ahead of our time when we started in the mid-70s, and now there's, of course, all kinds of sources of information, which is good, a very good thing. People are much more aware. But for us, it makes it a bit more challenging to kind of keep our name out there. A lot of people know our history but don't know that we're still very active and still doing good work.
Well, you certainly are doing great work. I was very impressed with the website, which is worldwatch.org, for those of you who are listening, worldwatch.org. And there's so many things going on. I mean, my goodness, you know, it is definitely worldly, the work that you are doing. Let's kind of focus on what we're going to do is we're going to have to take a break here in about 30 seconds, which is always fun. But anyway, I wanted to just, you know, for people that are want to get involved, I mean, there is so much going on. And just to come back to the website for a moment, you have got basically the programs. There is all the research going on. There's a whole bunch of press. How people can get involved and donate. And so I think it's really important for those of you who are listening, take a moment and just look and see the amazing work that's been going on. You can check out their partners and supporters and the publishing partners that are located worldwide. And it's very, very impressive just to see what's going on.
And I might just point out, sure, that if your interest is in gardening or organic or food generally, we have a food and agriculture program. And there's a button somewhere there on the website that you can click on, and you'll get access to, we have a lot of blogs, whole books on the topic, and I think that'd be in sync with your interests if you listen to this show.
That's right. Well, so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back with Robert Engelman, and we're going to continue to talk about World Watch Institute and all the great things that they're doing. Don't go away.
Thanks, Sherry.
Sure. Need help with pest control? Don't use synthetics. Grow naturally. The solution is Arbico Organics. They offer a complete line of products for your organic home, garden, yard, farm, horse, livestock, and pets. They're affordable, effective, and will provide the results you have been looking for. Go to www.arbico-organics.com or call 800-SOS-BUGS to speak with Arbico Organics Specialist. Be sure to order your free Arbico Organics catalog.
It's time to kick some ash because cigarettes have met their match. Smokers are switching to Vaporit e-liquid by LeSig because when you kick ash, you kick tar and smelly smoke too. LeSig smokes the competition with real people customer service, a 7-day satisfaction guarantee, and same-day fast free shipping. Become a vapor today at LeSig.com, spelled LeCig.com. LeSig e-cigarettes. Kick some ash.
Amanda Bosel here from Midas Resources. Today, February 17th, 2014, gold opened at $1,326.30. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,374.33, $687.16 for a quarter ounce, or $343.58 for a quarter ounce. Again, that's $1,374.33, $687.16, and $343.58.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? Wait a sec. Gold and silver are going up while Congress is trying to settle on the next debt increase. And there's no end to this madness. That old 401k and IRA can be converted into physical gold without tax consequences. I explained this in my book, 10 Reasons to Buy Gold. Don't let time slip away. Call for a free copy today, 800-686-2237. Get away from that Washington spin and get honest answers about gold. 800-686-2237. The book is free, 800-686-2237.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, thanks to Dan Pilla, you can get the tax help you need to end your tax nightmare.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce or eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay. And after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. With the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. Or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
Question: could too many GMO foods and toxins be overloading your digestive and immune systems? Answer: yes. If you're searching for a powerful detox that's gentle enough to use every day, use Pro-EM1 from Terraganics. Pro-EM1 is a powerful liquid probiotic that uses good bacteria to suppress pathogens and gently eliminate toxins from your body. A healthy digestive system will cleanse and remove toxins, support weight loss, improve absorption of food nutrients, and aid in controlling yeast and other infections. Pro-EM1 is made with only non-GMO and certified organic ingredients, has no preservatives, and is dairy, soy, wheat, and gluten-free. Pro-EM1 is the key to your digestive health. Order Pro-EM1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Also available through Amazon Prime. Pro-EM1 from Terraganics. Life's getting better.
Free from the shackles of corporate America, we're the place for independent thinkers. GCN.
New York, this is Sherry Herrera DeFry. My guest is the amazing Robert Engelman. He is a population expert and author and the president of the World Watch Institute. Welcome back, Robert.
Thank you, Sherry.
And, you know, I'm so glad that we're going to circumvent ourselves to something that is so important to everybody. You know, worldwide, gardening, food production is just, you know, we have to eat. And let's talk a little bit about the relationship of your current work to organic food and gardening.
Sure. It's something we've paid attention to really since the beginning. It's not the exclusive focus of our work on sustainable agriculture. We've looked at lots of different aspects of agriculture that in many cases are non-organic. So it's not like, and I just want to be clear that, as I mentioned earlier, we're not an advocacy organization, so we're not not so much specifically promoting organic agriculture, is saying that agriculture needs to be put on a sustainable footing worldwide. And there are lots of approaches as to how this can be done. We need to take that task very, very seriously. And there's no question, I think, in all of our minds who work on these issues, that organic agriculture plays a very strong role, and that the ideal certainly would be if we can figure out ways to produce the food that 7.2 million people, billion people, are eating all over the world organically. That would be the ideal, and why not go for that to the extent we can? But we also do investigate other aspects of agriculture that may not necessarily strictly fit the definition of organic. But there's no question that there's a lot of entryways, there's a lot of doors people who are interested in food production can enter into and know that they're making a contribution to sustainable food production and consumption.
I mean, that's really it's a mix of everything, and depending on what it is that we're growing and the location, the climatic conditions, I mean, the resources. I mean, it's there is no one single focused answer, and I like that you are so elegant in the way you present your information, and yet you're not making a choice for anybody or pushing someone in a particular direction, so that you allow people to make their own choices based on the information that you're providing to them.
Yeah, that's sort of the goal. We don't really sort of hammer people and say, you need to do this, that, or the other thing. But we can show that there are certain directions people can head, and they're not a bad person if they don't get all the way in that direction. They're helping if they move as much as they can in that direction. So, for example, reducing the use of chemicals in food production is just obviously going to be good. So let's look at the many ways that we can reduce the inputs that don't come directly from nature themselves. Improving the health of soil, something that, agriculture has probably not focused on enough as it's become industrialized since World War II. The more we can improve the health of soil and focus on getting carbon back in the soil, building the humus of soil, recycling the nutrients of natural, of food itself and plants themselves and the manure that all the creatures in the world are constantly producing into soil and integrating that into our soil systems. There's no 100% perfection that we're going to achieve, but the more we go in that direction, the better we are. We've also really focused on the importance of biodiversity for nutritious food, that when we produce food in the presence of other animals and plants, so in meadows and in smaller plots and close to forests and close to where wild animals are likely to live, there tends to be a more nutritious balance of food in our environment. So all sorts of things that are very much in sync with people who are interested in organic agriculture, no question about it. You can move in these directions and improve your health and improve the sustainability of agriculture. Same with, say, eating meat. We don't say you need to be a vegetarian or a vegan, but we do try to point out that cutting back on meat, the less meat people eat, the more we can produce for the whole world sustainably, and there's also a positive climate impact. There's probably a positive health impact. So there are all these, one of the things that World Watch delights in is where there are win-win-win solutions, it's obviously important to promote all the different wins to everyone so that people can see how many benefits there are to moving in a certain direction. And that's so rich in the case of food production and consumption.
Absolutely. It's interesting that what you're bringing up is, it makes me smile, because about, I'm going to say, 20 years ago, I actually attended one of the first LISA conferences. Actually, it was more than that. It's been 25 years now that I think about it anyway. And I was the only female speaker at the entire conference, and the acronym LISA was coined then, Low Input Sustainable Agriculture.
Right.
And out of that conference, one of the attendees was the manager of the largest melon farm in the United States, 25,000 acres of melons. And when they rotated out in Arizona, of all places, they rotated with cotton, which is completely not sustainable at all. And so the interesting thing is he got something out of my conversation, because I was the only one talking about the tools, how you bridge the gap. There was, you know, yes, we'd like to do this, but how do we do it? And that was what my speech was about. And he got together with us, and we started working with him. And it was very interesting, because the transition was just miraculous. We went from, first of all, helping him use beneficial insects to get rid of common pests like aphids, and on the melon. And he actually purchased a little fixed wing remote controlled airplane, and that you would actually use to release the green lacewing onto the melons. And from there, we went, and he had all of this cotton gin trash, and he didn't know what to do with it. And down the road was a dairy, and the dairy had all this manure, and they didn't know what to do with it. Well, we put the two of them together. They got married in a way, and they began to use that composted material on the farm. And along the way, we taught him how to grow cover crops and barrier crops and habitat crops and even bio-oases that just mentioned what we were talking about, where you actually attract wildlife in, creating that biobalance. And eventually, he went to growing 400 acres of organic melon.
Right.
And so those are the stories that, you know, we've seen over the years. And these are conventional growers. They reduce their use of the high inputs and the synthetic products, not because they're born again, bug eyed, you know, about, oh my God, organics or anything like that. They're excited about that it's easier to grow. The return is better. It costs less. And I think deep down inside, there's this feeling of reconnection to nature, and it's more humane.
Yeah, well, there are all kinds of forces that are promoting this development, and I think one of the things you're going to see is very practical farmers are going to see that as the inputs they've been using in the past rise in price, they're going to be looking for, and that's the overall trend. It isn't a, you know, consistent all the time trend, but in general, it's getting more expensive to use the high intensity, high input agricultural approach that's been used, and they're beginning to see that, you know, you don't have to be a dyed-in-the-wool, organic, nature lover or whatever to see that some of these things are less expensive, and often you have better results, and that the consumers want them and will very much, they'll pay a premium for them, as is obvious in the marketplace.
That's right. We're going to take another quick break. We're coming right back with Robert Engelman. Those of you who are listening, stay with us. Don't go away, because we'll be back in a few minutes.
So we decided to upgrade the look of our home.
You know, improve the curb appeal.
We decided to add the look of stone to the exterior.
We really like the stacked stone look.
Yeah, but when I checked into the price, it was ridiculous. No way could we afford it.
Then a friend told me about Genstone. Genstone.
Genstone comes in lightweight panels made of polyurethane. They've actually engineered the hassle out of installation. No mortar, no mesh. It was easy. Even I could do it.
We just screwed the panels to the wall and it looks like stone. I mean, it really looks like stone.
Yeah, from the box to the wall in minutes.
We love the look of our home now.
And Genstone is durable, comes with a 25-year warranty, and offers additional R-value for insulation.
If you want the look of stone at a price you can afford, call Genstone.
At 855-955-STONE.
Trust me, you'll save money.
And you'll love the look.
855-955-STONE. That's 855-955-7866.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document? Worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong, or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call, and how much will it cost? Our friends at Legal Shield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average over 19 years of experience, Legal Shield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to Legal Shield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let Legal Shield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE. 855-340-7283.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
It's no secret that silver is one of the oldest known natural antibiotics, but the mainstream media will never tell we the people this information. Why? Many drug companies and politicians have dangerous alliances that manipulate the way we live by prescribing drugs that only manage disease, keeping us dependent on big pharma. And with Obamacare at our doorstep, we are now forced into a system that many of us do not want any part of. And no man or government has the right to dictate how we as free people choose to take care of our health. The patriots at utopiasilver.com hold this truth dear. Colloidal and ionic silver supplements from utopiasilver.com open the door to a whole new world of natural healing for the body and the mind. Visit utopiasilver.com and discover the safe and effective health benefits of colloidal and ionic silver. Call 888-213-4338. 888-213-4338 and talk to the patriots at utopiasilver.com, a leading source of natural healing using colloidal silver, colloidal gold, minerals, vitamins, and herbs. utopiasilver.com.
The nation's largest independently owned and operated talk radio network. The Genesis Communications Network. GCN.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Easy Organic Gardener. My guest this hour is the amazing Robert Engelman, author. He is a population expert and the president of the World Watch Institute. Welcome back, Robert.
Thank you, Sherry. Good to be here.
Yes. Let's talk about your book, Population, Nature, and What Women Want, and how that relates to food production, organic food, gardening. We'd like to hear about it.
Sure, and there are lots of connections, and it's one of the reasons I'm so fascinated by population, particularly its intersection with women, because when you probe this whole issue carefully, you just see some people think that population is sort of a gloomy doom and gloom story, or that everybody's who's interested in it is predicting some kind of collapse or something, and overly wrought about population growth. But when you actually look at the history of it and how it's interacted with nature, with food production, with the development of agriculture and the rise of agriculture, you see that there are these fascinating connections and very positive connections, especially with women's lives and women's engagement in these activities. The connection with women and agriculture is very ancient. In many ways, we could say more ancient than that of men in agriculture. And that was one of the fascinating things about this book, because it was largely a historical exploration. But I was looking at this intersection of nature and the environment and our current dilemma with, you know, kind of overwhelming the earth and putting so much pressure on the natural world that things are changing rather dangerously for humanity and for the rest of the natural world. And also how much of that had to do with, you know, how we've grown as a species from just a few tens of thousands of people many tens of thousands of years ago in Africa to now being 7.2 billion and heading toward potentially 8, 9, maybe 10 or 11 in the next century, putting enormous pressures on the Earth. And why that happened and what sort of led to that. And one of the things that was fascinating to me is that women from very early times when we started basically walking on 2 feet in the old days have worked together to help children survive and to particularly fill the role of being dependable food providers from the bounty of nature, basically, of almost all early human societies, so far as we know. And, you know, it's impossible to know perfectly every one of them because there's not that much of a record. But based on what we know of humans' history and human prehistory and human societies today that have not yet reached the agricultural stage, women were traditionally the gatherers while men were typically the hunters. Women would hunt some small, you know, lizards and fish, and they would fish and things like that. But for the big mammals that people were going after, that was typically the guys with their broad shoulders and their spears. But women became very knowledgeable about nature. And it's very, very likely that women actually invented agriculture. They were the ones carrying fruits and nuts and seeds around and noticing that on the trails that they were walking on, where they dropped some of these things the year before, there'd be little sprouts coming up, and those were producing the same kind of plants that they'd been gathering in the forest down the road. And they put that together and were the early agriculturalists. There's all kinds of evidence that women really were the inventors and the initial agriculturalists. So it's kind of ironic. You mentioned the LISA conference you were at where you were the only woman talking about these things. One reason is that as populations grew, for various reasons, and the book goes into this and would take more than our time to explain the entire thing, but men got more and more involved as plows were invented, and that required broad shoulders and the ability to work with big animals. And not that women couldn't do that, but men tended to have a bit of an advantage just by their physiques. And suddenly men were, not suddenly, but over a period of hundreds of thousands of years, men were kind of taking over the business and domesticating big animals. And then next thing you knew, there were herders, and those tended to be more male. So there was this kind of growth in agriculture from women to men. And one result was that population grew even faster, and you had the need for hierarchical societies, which men tended to head. And then they wanted lots of surplus food so they could build cities and build monuments and have armies. And next thing you know, history got on its way. But the role of women really early on in helping their children survive so that populations could begin to grow in cooperatively giving birth. I have a section on the whole history of midwifery and how it really is the oldest profession, not by any means prostitution. Midwifery probably goes back to the dawn of the origin of the human species and the whole way women cooperated to make sure children didn't get eaten up by wild animals or fall into ravines or get sick really is the reason that we've survived as a species today. And they also get really by far the lion's share of the credit in developing the early food production, food maintenance, food distribution technologies that allowed early humanity to really spread around the world. It's not to say that men played no role at all, but it was just fascinating to see the role that women played. And understanding nature, women who really were the experts on plants, they developed the capacity to understand the very first medicines, and they developed the capacity to understand the very first natural contraceptives. So that it seems very, very likely that the reason that population did not grow for the first 95 or 98% of human history wasn't just that children were often dying, although that did play a role, but it was also that women themselves knew how to prevent themselves from having a pregnancy when it wasn't a safe time to do it. It was just a fascinating historical exploration that I thought had all kinds of potential for how we should approach some of these issues around food security, agriculture, the environment generally, population, and women's empowerment today.
Well, that is it. There's the whole idea of women's empowerment. Last week I had Osprey Oriel Lake on my show, and she was talking the same sort of conversation about the role of women and the importance of it, and in particular today, where when we can actually have an opportunity, not just in our country, but the other country, the starving countries, where we can get in and educate women, we notice that they become the ones that can begin to control their population, and also when the men in the population value their what their contribution is, that little bit of change makes a huge difference in the growth of population.
And it's happening really all over the world. I mean, one of the positive things about population right now in the world is that there still are some exceptions, and there are some very high birth rates in a lot of countries where poverty is still a problem and food security is still really a problem. But in general, the overall trend in almost every country in the world is toward more education for boys and girls and men and women, and more access to health supplies, including reproductive health. And that's especially important for the ability to plan your family. And birth rates are, for the most part, going down. There are some places where they're not going down very fast. There are a few places where they're going back up. But in general, as women become educated, as we become urbanized, as information is shared more broadly, the population growth rate does go down. It's still a positive thing, but it's on the way down. And this is really important because if we could reduce the, for any number of reasons, but germane to the topic of your theme, your show, to the extent that we can reduce where possible pressure on the land and the soil, the potential for using much more sustainable, much safer, much less toxic kinds of agricultural production will rise. It's one of the things that people are always claiming is, well, we have to use genetic modification to feed the world. We have to use all these inputs or the price of food will go way, way up. Well, some of that, and I don't agree with those arguments by and large, but there is a point that if you need to feed a heck of a lot of people with a small amount of land, you're kind of under pressure to find the way you can get the quickest, highest yield rather than to think about the long-term health of your soil and your food production system.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that this whole idea of, you know, it is an integrated approach. You really have mastered true integration, looking at the beginning, education, and then you have to look at the land, you have to look at the resources, you have to look at, you know, it's an infrastructure. At each level, there is something that's dependent on the other. So we're gonna take another quick little break here. Boy, the time goes by fast. So we're coming right back, and when we come back, we're going to talk about biofuels and organic food and gardening. So don't go away. We're coming right back.
Need help with pest control? Don't use synthetics. Grow naturally. The solution is Arbico Organics. They offer a complete line of products for your organic home, garden, yard, farm, horse, livestock, and pets. They're affordable, effective, and will provide the results you have been looking for. Go to www.arbico-organics.com or call 800-SOS-BUGS to speak with Arbico Organics Specialist. Be sure to order your free Arbico Organics catalog.
I'm David Cordani, President and CEO of Cigna. We're proud to support the March of Dimes by walking in the March for Babies. It feels great to know that the money we raise funds life-saving research and programs that improve the health of babies. With your help, we can make this year better than ever. Join Cigna and our coworkers across the country in March for Babies to help more moms have full-term pregnancies and healthier babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org and march to help our babies. Thank you.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. manufacturers. If you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL.
Lock in your price now. Take delivery in spring.
866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
We travel so much, and having a fake TV, well, it gives added peace of mind.
Burglars look for houses that appear to be easy targets. But fake TV can fool even professional burglars into thinking someone is home watching television.
As a recent widow living alone, it gives me great peace of mind to set my fake TV near a window and know that passing motorists and pedestrians will think someone is home watching TV when I'm actually away from home.
Fake TV easily plugs into any outlet, just like a light on a timer.
And they're so easy to use. You just plug them in and they're ready to go. Plus, they're so affordable that we have one upstairs and downstairs.
Fake TV is only $29.95 with free shipping. Order your fake TV by calling 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to faketv.com. That's 877-532-5388 or faketv.com. Fake TV, the burglar deterrent.
You're fired.
According to the Small Business Administration, 75% of small businesses plan to eliminate jobs or reduce workers' hours to part-time.
You're fired.
According to Gallup, the unemployment rate recently jumped to nearly 9%, and the underemployment rate hit a staggering 17.9%.
You're fired.
One out of three young adults and one out of two recent college graduates are underemployed. Hello, I'm Keith Abel, a pharmacist and a home business entrepreneur. In 2011, I became one of those statistics myself. Instead of looking for another job in corporate America, I joined Dr. Joel Wallet, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. We're creating steady incomes for ourselves and would like to show you how to do the same. If you want to supplement your current income, replace your income, so you don't have to become one of the statistics, then give me a call toll-free at 866-257-3105, 866-257-3105.
You're fired.
Don't wait till you hear those words. Start creating an extra income today, 866-257-3105.
We are the premier independent talk radio network, the Genesis Communications Network, GCN.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Easy Organic Gardener. This is Sherry Herrera de Fry. My guest is Robert Engelman, president of World Watch Institute. And Robert, welcome back. Thank you so much. The show goes by so fast, and you have so much to deliver here. I know that you want to talk a little bit about biofuels, how that connects to organic food gardening, and along with that, maybe address the issue of can organic food feed the world population? So I'm going to let you take it away.
All right, I'll try to be brief, given how little time we have. And it is there's so much to this, and it's so fascinating. It's hard for me to be brief, but I'll do my best. Basically, biofuels is a new element of pressure on land, where land is now being asked in ways that it wasn't in the past to produce a large amount of energy, because in addition to needing to eat, human beings need energy to, cook food, to heat homes, cool homes these days, and travel around the world or travel anywhere as people like to do. So, and again, there's a population connection here. If there weren't so many people in the world, there wouldn't be so much competitive pressure for the land to grow food for crops for energy rather than crops for just food. So I think it's going to be a tricky thing to figure out a way to combine this to work out this balance so that it doesn't cause food prices to go up and food to become more scarce around the world as we produce food for energy or crops for energy, plants for energy. I mean, in theory, biofuels are a good idea environmentally. Certainly the world got by on biofuels almost until the Industrial Revolution, or on solar and wind energy to some extent, because people were using wood heat, and that is a kind of a biofuel. But that we had much smaller population then, and the needs were quite different. People weren't driving big SUVs and things around. So that's a really, really difficult situation. And I think it would be good if we could find ways to produce biofuels in a much cleaner way than we're currently doing. At the moment, it's not even clear that it's carbon neutral to grow biofuels because of all the carbon-related inputs going in. But maybe using waste that isn't otherwise used for food or to enrich soils as biofuels might help. So I think in theory, hopefully we can do both food production to feed the world and some biofuels production to supplement the energy we need, hopefully in a low-carbon kind of way. But we're a long way from managing that balance right now, I'll say. Go ahead.
I agree with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of throwing corn ethanol at the moment. I don't think that exists for political and economic reasons more than because it's really helping either the food system or the energy system. And with all due respect to some of my own relatives who are growing corn in Iowa for ethanol, I don't think that's the best use of land for growing corn. Can organics feed the world? This is a really interesting question. And I guess the short answer, in case I hear the music and we get cut off, is that we don't know. And I'm not sure that I know enough about it. There hasn't been the rigorous research I think that's really required. In an aspirational sense, I would say let's hope so. Because the closer we can get to really organic production for feeding today's more than 7 billion people, the better off the planet will be. There have been some analyses of sort of how much nitrogen can be created out of manure and food waste and things of that kind that have suggested that it's not enough to feed 7.5 billion people. That's one of the most interesting pieces of research that was done by Václav Smil, who's a sort of an ecologist and economist out of the University of Manitoba. And he sort of like counted how much nitrogen, how much potassium, how much phosphorus do we need to have then it was about 6 billion human bodies. And his conclusion was that you couldn't do it with organics, which was provocative and interesting. And I'm still hoping that someone will come around and say, no, you can, and here's how. But this, to me, is part of the reason why population is such an important part of this issue. I think if over time, due to the choices that women and men make about their own childbearing, not that are forced on them by a government, but if over time we do have fewer children and eventually level off our population, and maybe over a long period of time, again, not through higher death rates, but through lower birth rates, actually reduce the human presence on the world, there'll be no question that organic agriculture can feed the population of the world. And that may be the future. I hope it is the future that we're looking at in centuries to come.
That's exactly where I was hoping you were going, because, I mean, at some point, the consciousness is pushing in this direction, not everywhere, but definitely it is pushing in that direction. And I sort of see it. There's going to be a tipping point, but then you have the other side, which is that it will reduce over time. And then it looks like a much brighter picture. There'll be hopefully enough to go around.
Yeah, I mean, think of all the knowledge we've gained as a very populous society and the progress we've made in human rights and well-being for people and gender relations. I mean, there's so many good trends that have been going on. Our health, we know so much more about our personal health and how to keep ourselves healthy, in part by eating good, nutritious food and minimizing our exposure to toxic chemicals. And imagine if we were living in a somewhat less populous society with more abundant nature around us and could apply all this knowledge we've learned to learning how to live together peaceably and healthily and extend our lives, have healthy children and healthy families. It just would really, really be a wonderful world. And I think that's a possible world. But I think, as you said earlier, Sherry, integrating all these different areas so that we're living more healthily, we have more respect for nature and how we can live in balance in nature. And that population is not the whole story, but it's one part of it to have a sustainable population in balance with the nature that the world has offered us. It gives us the potential to live on this world healthily for thousands and thousands of more years. And that's the direction I'm hoping we'll figure out how to go.
Well, you've definitely been a crusader and led the way. As we've got about 3.5-4 minutes left, what would you like to address next? I know that you talk a lot about government policies, being able to foster programs that can help with population control. What would you like to say about that?
Well, I think a lot of this has to do with people's the awareness of people who care about nature or, for example, agriculture, things of that kind. There's a bit of a fear about addressing population. I mean, and I understand that it can sound like, you know, someone's going to tell you how many children to have, or it gets into issues like abortion and immigration and all kinds of, there's a lot of hot button issues that are connected in one way to population. So quite a few people think, even people, you know, who are the kind of folks who would listen to your show, who are very, very interested in organic agriculture, but might be thinking, well, I don't want to touch this population thing because it's so dangerous and so contentious. What I guess I'd like to suggest is do some education about it. It's not nearly as contentious as you might think it is. There's tremendous consensus, for example, around what we've been talking about, which is that when women are able to manage their own lives in multiple ways, they just are much, much more likely to have their children survive and be healthy, and themselves survive childbearing and be healthy, and yet to have children later in life and have somewhat fewer of them. And if you can support those policies that you're comfortable with, and you know, the right to life is just one issue among a number here. If you consider yourself a right to life person and oppose the right to abortion, well, that's okay. I mean, that's your view. But there are other ways that you can support women's empowerment and get at this overall issue. But I think it'd be really wonderful if the people who care about, for example, organic agriculture, came to understand that it'll be much more possible in a world in which women can manage their own lives, in a world that is less populous, then I think they can go to government and say that, I believe this, I care about this. And they can go to the news media and say, this is an issue that really matters to me. You should write more about this set of issues. That could make a real big difference, because we don't talk about this nearly enough these days.
Right. And this is it's perfect that you've been on the show, because it really ties in why we love to garden, that whole feeling of connectedness with nature, the love of what we're growing, the idea of seed to table, that there is this wonderful magnificence to being connected to nature, and you're tying it all together, and it does start with how do we feed ourselves, how do we support ourselves, how do we sustain ourselves.
Yeah, what I like about what you and what you're all about is that it's doing. It's not just thinking. It's not just talking. It's about doing. And it's a kind of a spiritual practice, I think. When you're out in with a garden, and I spend as much time as I can in my compost pile, and I'm always inspired by how incredible it is that this thing is warm and active, and it's full of life, and it's going to be good for my food, the food you know, that I can grow with it. It's just an amazing thing. I think it really makes a big difference, and it's a kind of it's like meditation or prayer or a lot of other things. It connects you in a way that just thinking about these things isn't able to connect you.
You're absolutely correct. Thank you so much, Robert. It was a wonderful opportunity. And for those of you who are listening, thank you also for listening. And we will have another wonderful guest next week. Make it a great, easy, organic gardening week. This is Sherry Herrera Day Fry.
Does advertising on the Genesis Communications Radio Network actually bring positive results? Let's ask
Thomas Baldrick from Freeze Dry Guy.
Thomas, talk about customer service at GCN.
GCN is extraordinary in how they take care of their customers. The bottom line, Freeze Dry Guy keeps advertising on GCN because it works.
If you'd like to experience unbelievable customer service, call Lee Wickenhauser at 877-996-4327, extension 107.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Now you can get the same survival food U.S. Special Forces use on their toughest field missions. High protein, high energy freeze-dried foods known as long-range patrol rations, or LRPs. Soldiers love LRP rations. They're lightweight and easy to carry. Easy to prepare by just adding water. Easy to enjoy because they taste great. Civilians love LRPs as a solution for emergency preparedness and recreational activities with limited storage space, such as hiking, climbing, sailing, or RV travel.
Veteran-owned Freeze-Dry Guy is your exclusive source for this 2013 U.S. military overrun. Long on nutrition, these delicious entrees have a long shelf life, lasting decades. But this rare opportunity, this limited supply, will not last long. You have to act now. Call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD, or log on now to freezedryguy.com, freezedryguy.com.